everybody, and welcome to still another edition of the No Filter Sports Podcast. I'm Bob Page, sitting in for Eli today, who is off. And I'm joined by Denny McClain, Major League Baseball's last 31-game winner, and Fred Heumann. And Freddie, you know, you live in mid-Michigan, you went to Central, and the only thing I got to say to you to kick off our extravaganza today is the Mac is back.
How
buddy.
About that? How
did
about
you watch
that
game Wednesday? That
I
was
watched
fun,
portions
man.
Of it. It was a pretty exciting game, and that's Mac football. That's Mac football on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday nights. They don't play on Saturdays anymore. But the Chips pulled one out over Ohio. Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, Danny, did you watch the Central Michigan game?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't. No,
national TV. Wow, no, what amazing publicity.
I've been watching that? This election stuff like 24/7 to some degree.
I was up till the night before, I was up till 2:30 watching it and woke up at 7:30, and we still don't have a president as we record this.
Yeah, as we record this, you know, I don't have a phone that rings in my bedroom. I don't want to be bothered if I'm sleeping or doing something else. But I kept my cell phone on. And
all you do in your bedroom anymore is sleep. But go ahead.
That's right. At this age, you're probably right about that.
Yeah,
buddy.
I've been there.
So this time I kept my cell phone on and I would wake up like, you know, every 3 hours or something. I'd immediately reach over. Do we have a decision yet? Yeah. We got a decision yet. I mean, this is ridiculous. This, you know, Denny McClain, the year you will remember in your life is 1968. But for obvious reasons. But for the rest of us, the year we will never forget and always remember is 2020. How 2020, insane you're right. has this been? The stock markets hate uncertainty. They hate it. So what happens the day after the non-election is over? It goes through the roof, 1,000 points. And it was still going up on Thursday. You know, go figure with all of this stuff. But I thought it was really cool that Central was on national TV.
Yeah,
it was kind of cool. Jim McElwain, you know, that's a big-name coach. Of course, he's been at Central. He's coming off a good year. And I'd totally forgotten. Frank Solich is the head coach at Ohio U, the same guy who was 58-19 and won a national championship at Nebraska. And now he's been there 16 years.
Yeah,
16
at Ohio
years.
U. Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew Jim McElwain. He was here at Michigan State under John L. Smith as an assistant. I just saw him recently at George Perlis's funeral here in town. And at the time, it was thought, I didn't discuss it with him, but it was thought there's no way he's staying at Central. That was a one-year gig. He won 9 games, and he's going to move on to somewhere else. But he's still there, and they got a win last night to start the season.
Yeah, after posting, you know, a pretty big career, though, you know, he did get fired down at Florida. And speaking of Florida, I don't know if you guys know what Carroll City is. Boy, it's a really awful area down here of Miami. And I was so happy to see that Central starting quarterback is a kid named David Richardson, who looked great. They got him out of Carroll City. What a culture shock to go to Mount Pleasant, Michigan. And maybe, you know, kids like that, just get him out of there. Get him out of there. You know, it's just no place for kids to grow up. So I'm very happy about that.
Denny, have you been to Mount Pleasant, Michigan? Have you done a card show there or
anything? Oh, yeah. I've been to Mount Pleasant a number of times, my friend. A number of times. It's a nice little town.
If you blink, you'll miss it.
That's right.
Well, Central's gotten really big. The first time I ever went there, I started my career at Channel 6 in Lansing in 1974, and Roy Kramer was the coach of the Chippewas.
Right.
And I know you guys remember this. They had that great team with, Mike Frankowiak and Matt Means and guys like that. Central was a powerhouse.
1974, they won the Division II National Championship, and the next year went into Division I. That was their grand hurrah.
I take a camera crew up there in the days of no talk shows, no ESPN, no internet. So they're happy for any publicity. Roy stops practice for a minute. Hi, Bob. Nice to meet you with that Tennessee drawl. And so we're talking on the sidelines, and he'll take a quick break and he'll start screaming at somebody out on the practice field. And he was such a good guy and such a terrific coach. an interesting guy. And then, of course... If you guys turned this game off too early, we had our come on, man moment. Second down and 6, Ohio U at the Central 10-yard line. 1 minute, 21 seconds left in the first half. 20-13, Central on top. And the lights go out in Mount Pleasant.
Unbelievable.
Really something else. You know, a thing that surprised me about this also is that one of the things Roy Kramer and then Herb Deromedy were always so justifiably proud of, they didn't have a single player on their roster who was not from the state of Michigan. And now I mentioned this kid from Carroll City. He completes a pass to somebody from Phoenix, Arizona. Then he throws to his tight end, who's from Mobile, Alabama. So I guess McElwain's doing it differently. That's one way to do it. Do you like that, Freddie, as an alumnus?
Well, it is different because, when I was there, every kid was from the state of Michigan. But I think in the new wave of football that you have to expand outside of that, even if you're CMU. And I think Brian Kelly started to do that when he had his stint at Central Michigan. And I think it's changed over the years, and it has to change. You can't win even in that league with just kids from the state of Michigan.
No. So you have to go coast to coast.
Absolutely.
Coast to coast all the way. By the way, my contribution to Central is my son graduated with his engineering degree there. So
Danny or Tim?
Timmy did.
I didn't know that. He went to Central.
Timmy hasn't been able to get back over here since he went home in December. So he's dying to get back over.
He lives in Australia?
Australia, yeah. Brisbane. Yeah.
So Central goes on to win the game with 30-27. It was really a terrific game. It slowed down the staff. But you know what they're doing? I mean, I watched the whole game. They're cutting into it like every 5 minutes to show a Western Michigan highlight. This is like watching the intramural touch football championship at Ohio State. Long bombs down the field. Western scored 30 points at half. They won it 58-13. Toledo blew out Bowling Green 38-3. But Eastern Michigan lost to Kent State 27-23. And Freddie, if you've been with us on previous shows, no one has been more critical, and I don't blame him at all, than Danny McLean of Antonio Brown. And throughout the game, they kept showing on the ESPN crawl, former Central Michigan standout Antonio Brown is now back, of course, with Tom Brady. And the quote is, "I'm a better person." Do you guys believe that?
Well, I don't know that. He's on his best behavior right now because he's living in Tom's house, and I don't think Tom gave him permission to start throwing dishes and stuff all over
the house. He guaranteed that he'd be at the meetings, Brady did.
Well, yeah, he guaranteed he'd be everywhere. He'd be everywhere, and he'd be everywhere on time, which is a big, big moment for him. So
I'm scared
to see a guy go out and burn. He's burnt himself about two or three times. I don't know how many. I think this has got to be the last time he's ever going to get an opportunity like this. So
I remain skeptical because you are who you are. And I don't know if a zebra can change his stripes. Obviously being with Brady will help. Speaking of Central, I'm not going to name, but I know somebody that played with him at Central and said it was the worst teammate he's ever been with at any level of football. He just had no interest in being part of the team. And that carried on to the NFL. He had a great thing going in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And Tomlin gave him all the rope.
So did Le'Veon Bell, by the way, and he blew that. But go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, and he threw away an opportunity. Then he acted up with the Raiders. Then he went to New England and they got a little production out of him and they cut him. You are what you are. And I guess I got to root for the kid. I hope he's right. I hope he's sincere, but I remain ultimately skeptical because this has not gone on for just a couple of years. This has gone on for his entire adult life.
Right. Well, you've worked up there for years. I mean, do you know him? Did you ever interview Antonio?
No, I did not. I showed his highlights when I was, when we would show Central in Lansing, but I never met him. I never interviewed him. I don't know anything about him. I just know what I see and hear, and it's not very good.
Well, the tirades that he goes off on, you got to, I would assume that he's mentally challenged in some area. I mean, he just doesn't have the ability at times to think about where he is and what's he doing. And I don't think the problem is he's had all kinds of mentors, all kinds, and no one's been able to put the rope around him yet. So maybe Tom is the guy. Because Tom really likes him, according to the articles that I read the last week.
I think it's very interesting that Brady believes in him.
Me too.
All this time.
He believes in his talent. He believes in his talent.
Well, of course he does. But I don't think Brady's the type of guy. Of course he wants to win. But I don't think he'd take on a guy that he thought was going to destroy the team.
Right.
So I think Brady knows something about him from his brief time in New England. And they actually worked out together, I guess, in the offseason just because they've remained in touch and friends. So it does tell me something if Tom Brady believes in him. But I remain skeptical.
Yeah. And they also said when he showed up to camp, it was unbelievable the kind of shape he's in, the best shape of his entire life. So we'll see what happens. Go ahead, Brandon.
I think this is a challenge for Tom Brady because when you really think about it, right now that Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, that has a lot of egos on it and also has a lot of stars. Take a look at Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, and now Antonio Brown. those are some superstars. Leonard Fournette. You got some very, very big names, but ultimately I think it all goes right now underneath the Tom Brady umbrella. He's trying to run this team, and I think with those type of weapons, and that defense is pretty good. They struggled last week against the Giants, but I think this team might actually go for quite the run in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're good too. And speaking of that, how do you think Aaron Rodgers feels in Green Bay? They didn't draft anyone to help him. They drafted a quarterback to eventually replace him. They drafted no receivers. At the trade deadline this week, when there were other guys, and they need defensive help too. I mean, Brady's getting all these pieces around him in Tampa Bay, and the Green Bay Packers refuse to give Aaron Rodgers any help. They didn't trade or sign for a receiver. There are guys on that team that he doesn't even throw to. They didn't get any help defensively. I mean, they got a decent running back. They didn't get any depth there. Here's Brady collecting all these pieces, and the Packers refuse to give a great quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, any help. It just stuns me.
Are they teaching Aaron a lesson, or do you think this is – intentionally trying to avoid giving him assets?
They just think that they want to go with the guys they have because, you know, they think those are the best guys and they didn't find anybody who could make them better. That's how I read into it. You like this Central Michigan guy is the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, Fred. You know him?
I don't know LaFleur? Him. I knew his brother, who was there. His brother's Denny LaFleur, and I knew him back when he was at Central. He was actually on Roy Kramer and Herb Deromedy's staff.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't even realize Matt LaFleur was from the same family until like a year ago. So I do not know the coach of the Packers. I did know his brother quite well.
Yeah, well, at least Central got the game in last night, as did the MAC. Wisconsin-Purdue this weekend already canceled.
Right.
They first canceled the game against Nebraska on Halloween after the program had 12 positive tests, including that kid freshman quarterback, Graham Mertz, who just lit it up in the opener, and head coach Paul Krest. Then count these, folks, the number of positive cases just within the program rose to 22. Made up of 12 players and 10 staff members. And now there's speculation that the big Michigan-Wisconsin game set for national TV from Ann Arbor 2 weeks from this Saturday night might not be played. But fellas, how about this Saturday night? What a matchup! What a game! National TV from South Bend. It's number 4 Notre Dame hosting number 1 Clemson. As Lee Corso would say, not so fast, my friend. Superstar quarterback Trevor Lawrence is going to miss a second straight game because he had a case of COVID-19. Is he okay? Yeah. The ACC's medical advisory group now says they want to make sure he's evaluated for symptoms, heart symptoms, myocarditis, before they let him back. So talk about throwing some cold water over what should have been an amazing game. How do you like them apples, boys?
Well, all the Catholics out there, listen, don't eat any meat for sure on Friday. We need to pull together real hard because this could be ugly, really ugly. I don't care if they're number 4. There's no way that they can be defined right now with only playing a couple of games. So I'm looking for Notre Dame to get the hell kicked out of them. I
think they might beat them. I don't know how you think, Bob, but I think Trevor, based on how Clemson played last week,
yeah,
and almost got upset. And the game's at Dame, right? The game's in South Bend.
Yeah.
I think Dame has a heck of a chance without Trevor Lawrence to beat them.
Right.
But we shall see.
Well, we don't do religion or politics on this show. So let me just say that I am not religious. So it is, as you said, Denny, the Roman Catholics against the Jesus boys from down there in South Carolina. Jesus Christ runs that program. I hope both lose. I hope they both get beat. But they can't. So I don't watch this. I have no idea who's going to win that game.
Well, I don't either. But I got a hunch without Trevor Lawrence, the way they played last week.
No, they won last week, though, right?
Yeah, they came back to win. But I'm telling you, they were down 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And obviously, Trevor Lawrence makes a difference. And now the kid is not even the Heisman Trophy leading candidate. And from what Dabo Swinney says, he's ready to come out and play, but it's the COVID protocol that's going to keep him from playing in that game. He's healthy enough to play. He could run out there and play tomorrow, but the not enough time will have expired for him to play in that game. And that's the world we live in now.
Yes, it is, Freddie. And this paranoia about COVID is unbelievable. But we've had more than 200,000 deaths, every one of them a tragedy just in this country alone, and more than 1 million around the world. We know basically who is dying. It's still a tragedy. Now, listen to this. This is something you guys don't know because the story just broke. We know what this has also done to our economy. Just this morning in Bristol, ESPN informed employees that it would lay off 300 people while also not filling 200 currently open jobs. A message was sent from ESPN president Jimmy Pitaro in a company-wide memo that was obtained by the New York Post Thursday morning. Layoffs are not going to be concentrated in any one department. According to a source the Post has, it's going to be spread across the network, but on-air personnel, the people you guys watch on TV, are going to be spared, at least for the moment, according to sources. But what a mess we have.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I did hear that was coming last night. I didn't know who, and I didn't know it wasn't any on-air personalities. So everyone on the air for today is safe. Is that how I'm reading it, Bob?
That's what they're saying.
The other thing, too, they got to be careful. They can't get rid of so many support staff that they run short of people. So, I mean, they got a lot of concerns before they can start doing all these cutting. But listen, the industry's changed. Everything has changed, like Fred says. The whole world has changed, period.
Right. And those layoffs are obviously COVID-related.
Yes, every one of them.
Every one of them. And the whole world sucks. But in Ann Arbor, Michigan football sucks. And they play at Indiana on Saturday, as we all know. So let me ask you boys this question. In view of the heat Harbaugh is justifiably taken for the mediocrity in which he is mired at the University of Michigan, if he doesn't beat Indiana, with Ohio State still to come later on, and maybe Wisconsin if they play the game, is this game must win for Jim Harbaugh Saturday at Bloomington?
No.
I don't know if this game is must win because they're not going to fire him on Monday.
No, I don't mean that.
Yeah,
no.
I know what you're saying. But
to keep his job, to get a contract extension.
I think with the money they are paying him, $8 million a year, and his two coordinators at over $1 million apiece, I think that's the world they live in now, and the expectations are high, and you better win most every game there. That's what he signed up for. He didn't come in there to make them good and competitive, okay? He came in there. They were already good and competitive. He came in there to put them over the top and to beat Ohio State, and he can't do it. And so, you know, what he does against Indiana is, I don't want to say it's irrelevant, but when you invest that kind of money into a coach and his staff, that's the pressure that goes with it, baby. You better win just about every game, and you better beat your arch rival, and he hasn't done it.
Well, Michigan right now is 1-9 versus the top 10 opponents. Versus top 10 opponents, they're 1-9.
He can't win big games. He has not shown an ability to win big games.
And I keep saying, where the hell are the schemes? Where are the plans? Where are the other things that he should be bringing from the NFL? They're not here for some.
That's the biggest surprise to me, Denny. That's a good point. It's not just the winning. He has not developed a quarterback.
Right.
The best quarterback he's had so far is the one he inherited. And his offense is boring. I'm sorry. They are just not very interesting to watch. They're not very imaginative, and they're paying their coordinators $1 million apiece.
All right, so we're going to talk about Michigan State coming up next, the FLs, and all the stuff that we've already been discussing with former Michigan State standout quarterback Jim Miller, now a prominent national football commentator. That'll be later on in the show. But first, I want to tell you about Luke Nowacki. You just mentioned how crazy the stock market is. You know where the stock market's going? I sure don't. Maybe Luke doesn't either, but he's going to be the best guy out there to help you navigate all this. With Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, Luke Nowacki is going to help you plan for your future family obligations and your own retirement. He's got a track record of success, long-term stuff. He's got decades of experience. And Luke is going to enable you to create a custom solution for you and or your business. You want to call him. Here's his number, 248-663-4748, to set up a complimentary consultation. Then if you feel comfortable, let Luke do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your individual needs and will guide you through this morass. He's totally ethical. He's knowledgeable. He's caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Again, that number to call is 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And mortgage rates are still at all-time lows right now. I think you're aware of that. If your current mortgage rate is above 3%, Hall Financial simply asks you, what are you waiting for? You could be saving money. And currently at Hall Financial, almost 70% of all loans don't even require an appraisal. If for some reason your loan does, for this month of November only, Hall Financial will pay the appraisal fees for you up to $500. Remarkably, closing times have now sped up even more at Hall. Right now, the majority of loans at Hall Financial are closing in just 10 or fewer business days. So you just go to our No Filter Sports Podcast website and click on the Hall Financial link to get started. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, and more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right, here we go. We got Michigan State at Iowa. Rocky Lombardi, as we know, the quarterback for the Spartans. He is from Iowa. It's the return of Rocky, whether that puts a lot of pressure on him to perform or whether he, you know, for whatever reason, is lifted to great heights and plays well. That's going to be fascinating to watch. Fred, again, I love to talk to you about these mid-Michigan issues, and I know a lot of people want to hear about them. How did Mark D'Antonio go into Iowa and get this guy who was a state wrestling champion?
I don't have the background on that. I can't even fool you, Bob. I don't.
A lot of help you are, pal.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't study the Rocky Lombardi recruitment. So, rather than pretending like I know, I can't tell you.
I appreciate that.
That I know how they got him. He was a wrestler. And I don't, I'm going to ask that question. I'm going to find that out here soon, is how did they get Rocky Lombardi? I don't know Rocky very well. I've interviewed him.
Report back to us.
I'll get back to you. But yeah, it's a big game for Michigan State because of the two teams we saw in the first two games, the absolute unprepared mess in game one against Rutgers and the absolute fine tuned no turnover machine against Michigan with a quarterback who suddenly could pinpoint passes to receivers. Yep. Yes, he missed some. The big knock on him is he can't throw downfield. He threw downfield. So which Michigan State team will show up at Iowa? And then they have Indiana after that. So, you know, this is a pretty big two-game swing for Michigan State as to what their future, their immediate future is going to be in this conference.
Okay. You know what? If they just beat Michigan State and Ohio State, they could lose every other game.
Michigan and Ohio State, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They would be Michigan the happiest people in the world, so.
I don't know that that's true, Denny. Under Mark D'Antonio, who had, as we all know, such great success, it may have been true years ago at Michigan State. Not
it
anymore.
Wasn't
not
true under D'Antonio. I think it's true this
sure
season.
Sure wasn't.
Because this is the season of test for Mel Tucker, and if he beats Michigan State and Ohio State, he'll get a raise. money he's making. But beating Ohio State, that's the problem with this conference right now. I don't think there's anyone, including Michigan, that can touch Ohio State for the next 5, 6, 7 years. Yeah. I really don't. I think they could win this conference every year.
Okay, now, we didn't know that Rocky was going to start that Rutgers game right up to the Michigan State's first offensive possession. There was kind of an aura of secrecy about this coming in, and now the aura of secrecy continues. People are talking about this. The mystery of Elijah Collins and Devontae Dobbs. So everybody, Michigan State fans are excited because Elijah Collins, a running back, looked so great last year. We got a running back. And then he doesn't play. And you're talking about recruiting offensive linemen. If you don't know who this is, Devontae Dobbs, Alabama wanted him. Ohio State wanted him. Michigan, everybody wanted him. Michigan State got him. Now he's not playing. And it's not supposedly because of COVID. It's not because he's hurt. What's going on? Do you know, Fred?
I don't know. I don't know. I do know that I get upset over the – I remember the day he signed. We had our station at Channel 6. We went and did a big story on him the day he signed, and it was a big deal at the time. This is why I get upset over recruiting, because you don't know about these kids until they get on campus, and the recruiting is so over ballyhooed, if there is such a term, that, I mean, just because he was a big recruit doesn't mean he's a good impact player. And the obvious, I don't know to answer your question, Bob, but the obvious factor is here. He's just not good enough. That doesn't mean he won't be, but right now, if he were good enough to be playing, he'd be playing. And thus my skepticism over all this recruiting and all this attention we give to high school recruits who are 17 years old. And before they become men, we have no idea what type of players they're going to be. I think that's less mysterious than your first point. Elijah Collins, who was setting up to be the lead running back into the future, and he never touches the ball. And I don't know what's going on there other than what I just said. I don't go to practices. Nobody goes to practices. That's why the cloud of secrecy works in the coach's favor these days, because not even the beat writers get to see a stitch of practice. So nobody knows how these guys perform in practice, but obviously neither one of those guys is cutting the mustard.
Does anybody know at all if he's been hurt somewhere in the past?
No, not that I've heard of. There is no injury issue there that I know of. No.
Doesn't seem to be. Now, I've met Mark D'Antonio once in my life, and that was at a Michigan State alumni function in New York City a number of years ago. So I don't know him at all. You covered him for a long time. It seemed to me, looking from afar, Fred, that D'Antonio was even worse than Mel Tucker about this, with this veil of secrecy. Your colleague in Lansing of so many years, Jack Ebling, told me he didn't have D'Antonio's home phone number. If you wanted to talk to him, you'd call his wife, right, and his wife might relay the message. So what was it like covering D'Antonio? How difficult was it to do that?
Well, I got along very well with him. We had a number of sit-down interviews that were very revealing, and he wasn't very good in revealing at a podium. But if you got him in an environment where you sat down with him, he was a delightful guy. Player said he had a wonderful sense of humor that we never saw. I saw that in my conversations with him. But you're right, we're used to a guy here in Tom Izzo where his phone number is plastered on the walls of the bathroom. Anyone can have him. Anyone can talk to Izzo. He treats everyone like his best friend, and D'Antonio was guarded, even a lot different than George Perlis. I remember going to a practice one day on the sidelines, and we're shooting the video. You know, we're shooting B-roll of practice, and George Perlis, who knew me well, comes over and says, "Freddie, anything you need? This is during practice." Okay? Now we can't even get into practice, and I don't mean because of COVID. The practices under D'Antonio is you would go in and you would watch them stretch and do calisthenics, and they'd do a couple of quick drills, and then they started the scrimmages, and the whistle blew, and that meant all media get out. Nobody saw a practice under D'Antonio for the whole time he was there, really. And that's, these beat writers that tell you they know everything about the team, and I'm not knocking at them, it's not their fault. Yeah. They never saw any practices. They saw them stretching and doing jumping jacks and maybe playing a little catch of the football. As soon as the final whistle blew and they started practice, nobody in the media was allowed to see it.
That happened to me when I was at Channel 7 40-some years ago in Detroit, whenever that was, and it's Michigan-Ohio State week, and I got a camera crew, and I'm on the floor at Michigan Stadium. We're doing just what you said, Fred. We're shooting the jumping jacks and stuff. When all of a sudden it's time for that to end, here comes a manager running up to me. He says, "Okay, coach says you got to get out of here now. You got to get out of here." I wasn't done. So I said, "Just tell Bo it's me. Tell Bo it's just me. I just need a few more shots." So we're doing our thing. And I hear this booming voice across cavernous, empty Michigan Stadium. "I don't give a F. I don't give a F who it is." And I realized at that point I probably had overstayed my welcome. These guys are like that.
There's no question. And that's what's changed, you know, just to get into the career thing in my life. And that's what's made it a little less enjoyable, is the fact that we used to have access to everything, and now we have access to nothing. Personally, this isn't a shot at that. It's all coaches. I think they are all way oversensitive. I think it is nuts to think that somebody on television watching the B-roll, and Bob, to put it in layman's terms, we aren't shooting plays. We're not shooting wide shots necessarily. No. We're getting our B-roll for certain players. We're shooting ISOs on the quarterback. Nobody could see anything from television video that would be any very revealing anything. And I think all these coaches are way too protective. Yeah. And now Izzo, he lets us into practice once a week. We can watch the whole practice.
Yeah.
They've had to have social media rules. You can't tweet anything during practice. If there's a fight, you can't report it. And that's become a little bit, you know, dicey with the media.
But aren't they more concerned with what the kids might say to the media? I just don't think it's secrecy of the plays, secrecy of their plans. I don't think any of that matters. I think it's got to control the kids. I think that's what
well,
it's
that's
all
true.
About.
That's true, Denny, but that's a different issue. Fred and I are just talking about shooting practice. The only guy I know who shoots practice to reveal plays isn't even a media member. He's a head football coach somewhere in New England. Yeah. So that's a whole different thing right there, you know?
Right.
And speaking
it's
of the professional,
unbelievable, the cloud of secrecy.
Right. Speaking of the professional football ranks, hopefully, I mean, they're talking about, again, as we record this Thursday morning, the Thursday night game, 449ers are already on the unable to perform list due to COVID. Look at Matthew Stafford. They still don't know if he's going to play at Minnesota against the Vikings on Sunday.
Well, I think he got cleared last night.
Is that right? I hadn't seen that Thursday morning, but I'll tell you what I did.
Spoke a little bit, Fred. He has been technically cleared, but he's got to wait the 5 days out before he can play.
So it's still iffy. Bob's accurate. Yes. It's still iffy.
Yeah, I thought so that
Saturday,
I saw that.
Saturday, he comes off the list, and they've got a private plane standing by waiting to whisk him to Minnesota. So well, that's
let me put
the way it,
let me put it
got,
this way.
He cannot get around the five-day wait.
I know I just said I would have regretted saying Michigan State had no chance to beat Michigan last week. Thankfully, I didn't say it. I'm going to tell you right now, if Matt Stafford isn't on that plane, they have zero chance,
no chance.
To beat Minnesota. I mean, none. Quote me. None. Well, I don't think they're going to beat him even with them, but they're not going to beat him without him.
Now, how about this one for those few of you out there, and Brandon McAfee, you know who you are, who are actually still fans of the FLs? Here comes ex-Lions wideout Golden Tate, who was told to stay home from Giants practice Wednesday, suspended, disciplined for his outburst during Monday's loss to the Buccaneers. He's only caught one pass in 122 straight games going back to 2012, but he wasn't targeted by quarterback Daniel Jones during the first three quarters Monday night. So did you guys see this? After he made his first catch early in the fourth, Golden Tate looks at the Giants sideline and says, quote, throw me the damn ball, a la Keyshawn Johnson, another knucklehead. Later, Tate made a difficult touchdown catch to give the Giants a chance to tie the score in the final seconds and yelled directly into the TV camera, throw me the ball. How about that?
Well, going back to my earlier point, I know where they'd throw him the ball, in Green Bay. They should have got him for Aaron Rodgers.
And he was on the block.
It was logical he'd go to Green Bay.
Apparently, there's a problem with this contract, that there's a money issue there, and that's why the Giants weren't able to move him. But we thought they would after the Monday night game was over, because the Giants aren't going anywhere, especially with mistake pwned Daniel Jones.
I always thought one of the worst things we ever did was get rid of him. He was a great player here. He was a great player here. He fit into the offense. Stafford loved him. Everybody liked this guy. And to dump players, it doesn't make any sense.
You know who didn't like him? You know who didn't like him, Denny? The head coach.
Yeah, the head coach. Yeah, I agree.
So he went off with Darius Slay, who the head coach didn't like. Don't get me started.
Yeah. We three are.
That's the difference between a good coach and not so good a coach.
Right.
That's the difference right there. You play with who you have, and you make everybody a part of the team. If you can't make the team stick together, you got no business on the field, none whatsoever.
Some great coaches have told me over the years, give me a few knuckleheads because I can win with them. And they didn't use the word knuckleheads, okay?
Right.
You have to be a little different these days. You have to be a little more accepting.
Did Daryl Rogers say that?
No.
Okay, because I remember when he called Eugene Bird an ass. He said, well, Eugene's basically an ass.
Well, that's the word I wasn't going to say rather than knuckleheads.
I think we can get away with that on the show.
Well,
but Brandon
go ahead. But my point is, there are some good coaches that think, give me a few of them, because that's the way they'll be on the field. And my point is, as a coach, you have to be a little bit more accepting of that. I'm not saying the inmates should run the asylum. Who is a better example of that than Tom Izzo? Do you realize some of the fights that he and Mateen Cleaves got into? And he named his kid after him, okay? Yeah. His kid's middle name is Stephen Mateen Izzo. You have to, as a coach, and Izzo's captured that magic, you have to realize that a player who wants to fight you in a huddle or at a practice can be of value to your team. Matt Patricia has not realized that.
We three have been in this media business a long, long time. Mr. Zaret as well, who joined the year after I did. I think Eli's first year was 1975. It's almost an unwritten code among us. I almost never criticize fellow sports media members publicly. But on Twitter, I took Carlos Monterez to task this week. He's a Detroit Free Press sports writer who covers the Lions for writing that near weepy column. Why is everybody picking on the Lions? I mean, it's just that the Detroit sports media, with one or two exceptions, is so weak. And did you see this? This is a disgrace. Detroit Free Press headline story, Michigan football, Jim Harbaugh need an amicable divorce. Now, was that written by a great Free Press hard-hitting sports writer? No. It was a quote from Paul Feinbaum down in the SEC. These guys have so few writers with strong opinions who are interesting to read. And I know Denny never liked Joe Falls, but you can't say he wasn't a great sports writer. What the hell's going on with the Detroit media? Why would you print a headline from somebody down south? Why wouldn't you have your own hard-hitting columnist in Detroit say, Harbaugh, out?
Well, I can also say that Joe Falls wasn't a good sports writer also, by the way, Joe.
No, I disagree with that totally. Yeah. I disagree. He was a great writer. You didn't like him, Denny. I understand that. I respect that.
Well,
he was a great writer. Is what has come to...
He was a fabrication.
This is what has come to you guys for the feckless Detroit newspaper media. There is a young man named Evan Petzold, whom I think is pretty good. I think he's got a real future in the business. Have you seen his byline? He writes about the Tigers and Major League Baseball all the time. Do you know what his job is at the Detroit Free Press for such a prominent writer?
He was an intern, wasn't he?
He's an intern.
Yeah. He may be better, and he may be one of their best writers. That's true.
He's pursuing his dream, right? Yeah. If he's going to be an intern, do they pay the interns down there or not? You know?
Well, they have to now, I think.
Yeah, that now they do. Okay.
Yeah, they don't have unpaid internships anymore. Yeah. Friends, we've been telling you about Feldman Automotive for some time now. And so you know, you regular listeners, that it's Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They've got five locations: Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman, in fact, has nine locations total, and that includes Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Feldman also has Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter. That's in Waterford. They're known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. So you buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, and then you relax with Feldman's exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. How about that? And how about this for an exclusive kicker? You will get guaranteed credit approval. So we know you can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's nine locations. As I said, Feldman's massive inventory is unmatched in Metro Detroit. And for you folks listening in mid-Michigan or northwest Ohio, wherever, it's well worth the drive. You could also even buy online at FeldmanAuto.com with an effortless, hassle-free experience. Power Home Solar is America's fastest growing solar energy company, and they're based right in Metro Detroit. In fact, every one of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels is made right here in America, presidentless America, as we record this. With solar energy from Power Home, you save money, help save the environment, and you're never again going to suffer a costly and infuriating power outage. Partnering with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, you're going to be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for your in-home energy. Yeah, you're going to lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages for good. Power Home even has financing starting at just $99 a month. So call them at 1-800-POWER-90, and you'll save an additional $2,000. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Speaking of presidential politics and politics and stuff, did you guys see who was elected a United States Senator?
I know Tommy, where you're going.
Tommy Tuberville.
Because the people on the net, one of the networks last night called him Tuberville, and I started chuckling. Tuberville's going to win. I said, it's Tuberville. But he did win, didn't he?
Yeah, he did win. He did win big.
He beat Senator Doug Jones in the sovereign foreign nation of Alabama. As you know, he spent 21 seasons as a college football coach, four programs, coached at Ole Miss, 95-98, 10 years at Auburn. Tigers there went undefeated on route to an SEC title in 04, finished second. Now, why am I mentioning this? Because this reminded me so much of the classic Peter Sellers movie. I hope you guys know what I'm talking about, Being There. Do you know what that is? Chauncey Gardner. Remember the gardener at the estate? His boss died. There were no other people in the will, and so he took over the estate. He was an idiot. Chauncey Gardner. No discernible background. No one knew or could find out anything about him, and he wouldn't tell anybody anything. So I was reading about how old Tommy won this race. And you, did you see what he did? He refused to debate his opponent at all. Right. Wouldn't debate him. And he wouldn't take a single position on any issue in the race. So you go to the internet, you know, you Google Tommy Tuberville on the issues, there's nothing there. He ran on the fact that he was Tommy Tuberville.
That's right.
And he won a United States Senate. The only thing he did say of any political nature whatsoever that I saw was, I think I'm quoting here, I don't want to paraphrase, I thank God every day that he sent us Donald Trump.
Boom.
Well, people by and large, voters don't necessarily study the candidates or study the issues. So familiarity gets a lot of people elected to positions. So they see the name Tuberville. They say, I know him. He was a football coach and they vote for him. That's how he got elected.
Well, how do you think Schwarzenegger become governor? How did Jesse Ventura become governor of Minnesota?
Standing up there and slam dunking people.
Hell, Denny McClain could have run for governor of Michigan and won after the 1969 season.
After Adrian Peterson has got a big day coming up Sunday, doesn't he?
Well, going against his former team.
Going to Minnesota. I hope he runs for 250 yards and more. I just want him to stick it up somebody's butola.
Well, if he runs for 250, that'll be 248 more than he got last week, right, Bob? Didn't he rush for 2 yards Sunday?
Yeah, well, the Lions The Lions have settled on a feature back. The kid looks pretty good. I don't know that it's going to make any difference. But, you know, the thing about this game is both teams still technically have a chance at the playoffs. Denny has predicted, and he's not alone, that the FLs will make the playoffs. So we're looking at a must game. I think either team that loses this game, well, especially if it's the Vikings, they're not going to make the playoffs.
Little early to say that. Little early. This is still early November. I don't know if I'd go that far, Bob. I think it's a sizable game because they are division rivals. But I don't think the loser is out of anything. There's a lot of losses left in both teams' schedule, and neither team is real good. But I don't think I'd go that far that it's a must win. But I think it's a key game.
What a bunch of crap games besides that being a crap game. Did you see who's playing the Monday night game coming up? You know who's playing that game?
Who's that?
Tell me.
The winless New York Jets.
Oh, that's right.
Against the now pathetic New England Patriots.
They thought it was going to be a big game
when they scheduled it.
Yeah.
You think they'd move that to Sunday? Don't they have the ability to move games to Sunday?
No, they can't. They can't flex games, unfortunately, as they do in some other sports. And how about this? What a great rivalry. Two of the most storied traditions in all of the National Football League. The New York Giants and the Washington Redskins. What a dog that's going to be when they play Sunday afternoon.
Well, the first game, they should play that game at 3 o'clock in the morning.
There you go. You have more New York background, but I can't believe how pathetic the Jets are this coach, Adam Gase, who has a Michigan State connection, has kept his job.
He went to Michigan State. He's from Marshall.
Yeah. It just blows me away how bad the Jets have become. I just can't believe it.
They've had a lot of injuries. That's not enough.
You guys know Cousins better than I do.
Fred does.
The bottom line is with him, why is his inconsistency getting worse now than better? I've never seen a guy who can have a great Sunday and then it takes him two Sundays again to recapture whatever.
Well, they won last Sunday and they only had him throwing 14 times.
I mean, I don't understand it. The guy's got a great arm. He throws relatively accurately. And the guy just can't play under pressure.
Do you agree with that, Fred?
That was the knock of him on him at Washington, too, is he'd have these glamorous games against bad teams.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had a decent NFL career, and he's made a boatload of money.
Boat full of money.
But there's no question that he has not become a premier quarterback in the league. I don't have an answer for his inconsistencies. I know that he's a great kid and a real competitor and was a real leader here at Michigan State. But his time with the Vikings is – I mean, even he said a few weeks ago, if I keep this up, I'm going to get replaced in a moment of candor. But he has not found a consistent level in that league in either place he's been. So he's probably – bigger than the team right now, he's probably playing for his job the rest of the season. There's no with them again. We go.
No,
back to
come on. You're paying a guy that kind of money. You're not going to bench Kirk Cousins. You're going to just tough it out with him.
Well, this year you are, but you may make a move after the season. I think he's playing for his job in the future for the rest of the season is what I meant.
That would depend on his contract reads. That would depend on how his contract reads. I mean, with a salary cap in the National Football League.
It goes to the Jim Harbaugh conversation we have earlier. When you're paying that kind of money, when you're paid that kind of money, you have to produce.
Yeah, and that's a pressure spot. I mean, I guess all pressure spots to one degree or another exist in National Football League cities. But boy, that's a great team, the Minnesota Vikings, with a great tradition. That's a real pressure spot. Hey, may I ask the three of you guys sitting here, do you know what NIL stands for? NIL.
No.
Well, it's a legal term, but it's applicable to sports in a very big way. It stands for name, image, and likeness. And that is what the NCAA is now going to allow what they term student athletes, wink, wink, to start making money off, as you know, and still keep their college eligibility. Now, ESPN, and maybe it was a slow sports news day, had a huge headline article on their website Wednesday. And from what I read, they think the top college jocks, think of how much money Kirk Cousins would have made at Michigan State. They think top college jocks could make as much as $1 million a year marketing themselves through social media and other avenues, such as what Denny McClain does. You can go, you make personal appearances just like Denny does, and you sign your autographs for a fee. How do we feel about that?
I don't like it.
Okay, why not?
Why don't you like it?
Because I'm gullible enough to think that even though student athlete is a ridiculous term and way overused, I don't think in that amateur environment, if you start making money, it just opens the door for more cheating. And I think it's dangerous. And I think it's, you know, I don't deny them the right to, with their likeness, as Bob says, to take advantage of it. What's the old Chris Webber line? I used to go into the sporting goods store and my jersey's selling for such and such, and I can't even afford a box lunch, okay? Well, turned out that Weber probably could afford more than a box lunch, but that's another story. But I can't tell you that I like it. I think it's a dangerous box to open.
Freddie, I'm going to ask you a question. Danny, I want you to listen to this. You went to Central Michigan. Did you take out loans to get through Central?
I may still be paying on them.
There you go. When I came out of Michigan State, I owed $32,000, and that was a lot of money back then. Now, if you look at a young man who's going to one of the most prestigious institutions in the world, the University of Michigan, for instance, let's say he's not from the state of Michigan, what do you suppose it would cost somebody an out-state tuition to go to Michigan? So you look at that, isn't that payment enough? And then you have the Michigan degree and the status it confers upon you. And the cachet. I mean, I don't really like this either. Denny, why do you like this?
Well, I just think it's time for the kids to be paid. Plain and simple. I just
why?
Think they should be able to take advantage of it.
But they're getting the scholarship. If they take advantage of it.
Scholarships. I'm talking about everybody. All of the teams, different teams, soccer. I mean, I don't care who it is, but I think they're entitled to be paid. I mean, they put their bodies on the line. And listen, I realize why they do it. They want to showcase themselves. I totally agree with that. But I still think there's benefits to both sides, for the players getting his likeness out there and for the university, because he's going to be promoting indirectly the university as well.
Hey, I'm the star running back here at my college, man. So I made $150,000 last year. My offensive guard says he's a lot more important than I am, because I wouldn't have had all that yardage had it not been for him and the old line. And they only made $10,000 last year. Do you see how this could sow
I understand. And you know what? People have a tendency to come together and figure out something that's fair and equitable. I don't know how long it's going to take, though, to make this equitable.
I feel like they should give them something, just based on the fact that those kids that are playing – They are running in some colleges a multi-million dollar operation. They are the heart and soul of it. They're the ones that are bringing the money in. I can tell you right now, with all the free scholarships that the entire team gets, it's not even a pittance to how much they've made that university.
I consider major college sports to be, in essence, a corrupt institution. In essence, minor league sports. I mean, and this just rubber stamps it, doesn't it, boys? We're going to start paying these guys now, but you can still play college sports even though we're paying you. I don't know. I get back to the scholarship.
Let me ask you a question.
Issue.
How does it affect you? How would it affect any of you?
Well, that I guess
other than not liking it.
Well, that's a good question. We're just kicking this thing around. I mean, no, it wouldn't have any personal effect. I guess would it on anybody? I don't know.
It wouldn't affect me personally, Denny. I think it's the idea of it. I mean, there are brilliant musicians at universities that aren't going to get paid. I understand that what they do doesn't bring in the revenue that college basketball and college football does. There are brilliant people in theater that are wonderful, wonderful at what they do and could have great careers. They're not getting paid, granted.
How about brilliant research scientists who are changing our world for the better?
The next thing
and
I was going to go to.
What are they making compared to what Jim Harbaugh is making at Michigan or Mel Tucker at Michigan State?
Well, that's relative.
Is that right? And Denny, that's what it's about. It's about unfairness. What's right, what's just, and what's fair. So, no, it doesn't affect us personally, but we're just standing up for what should be right.
It doesn't affect me personally, but that doesn't mean I have to like it.
What's right and what's right is the bottom line. As long as the two people agree on the substance of the agreement, we should stay out of it.
Okay, we got to say goodbye to our radio audience in Toledo. Thank you guys so much for joining us, staying with us. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right, boys, by the time our listening audience hears this, we may have a solid start date of December 22nd for the new NBA season. The players were planning to vote on whether they would prefer to start it in December, wait till January. The league's Board of Governors is meeting also on this on Friday. The vote's going to show how many prefer a 72-game season that starts December 22nd, or perhaps just 58 or 60 games that would start on Martin Luther King Day on January 18th. Now, you know what the NBA wants here. They want the big Christmas money, the big schedule. They have $500 million in additional revenue for the coming season. Of course, the player is going to make more money, too. But look at it this way. I mean, my God, the Lakers just won the championship, it seems like, 3 days ago. And they're not just going to start playing. They got to come to camp like around December 1st. Do you blame a lot of the players, especially LeBron, for saying, no, it's too early?
I don't blame them at all. I think you need a recovering period of time, and that's not 1 month. It's not a month and a half. It's not 2 months. It's 3 or 4 months of recovery. That's what it takes, especially baseball, 162 games you play. Basketball, all those games they play. Football. In football, my God, they take a beating for, 3 months, 4 months. So they're all entitled to recovery. And if they don't stand up for themselves right now, it'll just get worse.
The NBA players were in a bubble. They did not get to see their family.
Yeah. Now, the NHL and the NHL Players Association announced early in October last month that they had shifted their target date for starting their 2021 season to January 1st after they initially said they were going to, play December 1st. So, maybe that's a little bit better. I don't know. I mean, everything is so messed up.
What changed in the NBA, Bob? I read a few days ago, and I realize they're about to sign a deal that starts on the 22nd, but I read a few days ago that there is no way we're going to play on Christmas Day. It's not enough time to recover. So I know that Christmas Day money through television, it's a big day for the NBA and has been for several years. But I think it's
too
soon.
Well, if the players don't play, I mean, they can't get paid, right? I mean, I don't know how this works.
I think it's too soon to ask them to come back and start a season so quickly. I really do. I think it's too soon. And I think the NBA ought to bite the bullet and let them have their proper off-season rest so they'll have a better season when it starts a little later. I think December 22nd is way too early, since it seems like yesterday we crowned an NBA champion.
As I said, again, I'm not an attorney. I'm not privy to these agreements. I have to be honest with you folks. I don't understand how they work. But if I got a guaranteed contract with the Detroit Pistons paying me whatever amount a year, am I getting paid anyway, even though they're not any games? I don't know what they're doing about this, because it would seem to me that if you ain't playing games, you ain't getting paid, no matter what your contract says, or if that's part of the collective bargaining agreement, as I suspect it might be. So maybe the players thought to themselves, hey, let's get paid. Everybody lost a lot of money last year. You understand why Adam Silver's doing this. The teams, everybody's crying about this. Let's get back to work.
And they shortened the season, right?
Well, whenever the NHL starts the season, they're going to do it without Gus Nyquist. The X-Wings forward has a torn labrum. You know, he's going to undergo surgery, and he's going to be lost to the Columbus Blue Jackets for 5 to 6 months. Nice kid. I mean, he had that big season with the Wings. He looked like he was, which is why he got the big contract in Detroit. Right. He was going to be a cornerstone of this franchise. He just didn't, I don't know, Tweedledee, Tweedledum. I didn't blame the Wings at all for getting rid of Nyquist. And they really like him in Columbus. They really like him. So, you know, good for Gus, and hopefully he can come back from this. And Stevie Y, as you saw, signed Anthony Mantha to a 4-year extension just the other day. You know, this kid is so talented, and you don't see, and I'm going to say this, and I don't care if somebody doesn't like it, you don't see a lot of French players who are also tough. This kid's tough. He doesn't mind dropping the gloves. He'll stand up to anybody. He'll go in the corners, and he is a cornerstone. And unlike the other three sports, where few free agents want to come to Detroit, because let's face it, it's not exactly, you know, Miami, New York, or Los Angeles. Detroit is a glamour destination for hockey. And now that Stevie Yzerman is rebuilding the Wings, you know, I don't think they're going to have any problem signing guys and getting guys to come.
Well, speaking about coming to Detroit, Rick Porcello wants to come back to Detroit. What do you think of that?
Well, I would have thought wonders about it after his Cy Young season, but you know what? That was almost fluky, wasn't it, Denny? He hasn't been the same pitcher. I mean, I don't know.
In the last two years, he's been 1-7 with an ERA of 5.5. So
he's got a fastball now that players in the other dugout are licking their chops to hit. He's not the same pitcher he was when he left here. I think it's a real gamble to sign.
Well, you can't throw a baseball on an arc and expect to get anybody out.
Folks, we know who you are out there. Yeah, we do. You're over 45. You can't see your phone without your reading glasses on. And that's why so many people who are over 45 have been getting multifocal lens implants from Dr. Yaldo that enable you to see the tiniest of print and also see perfectly at a distance. This is a life-changing operation, and it's a lifetime-lasting procedure. Now, people under 45, like Brandon, are still opting for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo, the most precise in the world. That enables them to throw away those annoying contacts and glasses, and in most cases, get better than 20/20 vision. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. So look, get a free evaluation. It doesn't cost you anything. And find out which procedure is going to change your life in ways you can only imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES or just go to YaldoEyeCenter.com and tell them Eli Zerrett, who's had this done and loves it and No Filter Sports sent you, and you're going to get $1,500 off the regular price. Starlink and Mercury, Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership, a family business started half a century ago by Hoot McInerney, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. 5-star reviews have been pouring in as Star makes buying or leasing a car during this pandemic efficient and easy. One woman wrote, "I just bought a Nautilus online from Star. It was super easy. It was delivered to my home, and they even sanitized it right in my driveway." Everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. And at buying a Lincoln at Hoot McInerney Star, you'll find both the buying and service elements to be a hassle-free and as effortless experience as is possible. So drive the Star of American automobile luxury. Make an appointment at 248-354-4900, or you can just simply buy online at starlincoln.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the mailbag. It's time.
Denny's always chomping at the bit to do the mailbag, so let's get right into it. You can tweet Denny at MU2Denny. You can go to Twitter and find Fred Heumann at UncleFred6, and you can tweet me at BobPageSports. As long as you're nice, I promise, I'll respond. So first of all, we have a lot of tweets about the previous show we did with ex-Michigan standout quarterback Steve Smith as our guest, in case you didn't have a chance to hear it, and shame on you if you didn't. Gary Moore, who has worked in sports TV in Michigan in past years, has very underrated quarterback from my home of 25 years, Grand Blanc. Second fastest UM quarterback behind Denard Robinson. Seems like a good dude who gets forgotten when discussing UM quarterbacks of the modern era. Tremendous athlete. I played pickup basketball with Steve Smith 30 years ago, and he could go end to end with the ball in the blink of an eye. David uses the same phrase about Smitty. Underrated Michigan quarterback. His skills were made for today's spread offenses. And Michigan fan Chuck Monin, who also calls himself the pigskin preacher, adds, "Steve Smith was a great quarterback. A shame that injuries kept him from achieving his true potential." Haven't heard from listener Tom Pirelli in quite a while. I can never decide whether he likes me or not. He tweeted to Brandon, "Hey, Brandon, can you recap the 180 or so No Filter Sports podcast episodes and count how many times Bob Page has ever been right about anything? should be a very low number. I'd set the over under at about 3. But Tom, how come you're picking on me? Eli said here that his alma mater was going to kill MSU as well. Who did pick State to beat Michigan? Not even Mel Tucker's wife and mother, I bet. And you can email us folks on the show, asknofilter@gmail.com, and you can make website submissions at nofiltersportspodcast.com. After one listener bitterly complained about me last week, another regular listener, Al Kopak, writes, as always, a great show. Love the banter back and forth among you guys. And I, for one, enjoy Bob's passion and opinions. Most enjoyable. I have to agree with Brandon, though, instead of Bob, about the Walmart Wolverine issue. I've followed Michigan since I was a kid. I do not consider myself a Walmart Wolverine. Although I didn't go to Michigan, my money did. My daughter's a proud graduate at the University of Michigan. And by the way, quite a story with Todd Stottlemyre, you guys. People tend to forget that famous athletes all have a personal life, too. A real tribute to all the research you guys put in. I'm going to save the name on this to the end for a reason that will become obvious to Fred Heumann. Hey, guys, the last few shows were great. I really enjoyed your interview with Manon Rayom. She really is something. Fascinating life. Having her on after your Jake Wood interview is quite a contrast. Denny, think about this. It brings up the question, who is the youngest interviewee you've ever had on? Manon could be in the running. Certainly is the prettiest one, he adds. Furthermore, is Jake Wood the oldest interview subject we've had on the show.
The limo and the jet standing by for her.
Yeah, for my own.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to think about that in terms of the age of, I mean, let's put it this way. As you regular listeners know, most of the people we have on are just old, period. But that's part of the reason for our success, because everybody says so much they like to hear.
And, you know, we've had Drew Henson. He's not too old.
I'd have
to look through the archive.
Right.
Well, Jake Wood's got to be the oldest, right?
Yeah.
I would think so.
Yeah, I think so. I would guess so. So our listener is
86. That's probably near the top of the ladder. Yeah, I can't think of anybody else.
I think we have some that are older. I mean, Jake Wood is 83.
Who's older than 86 that we had on?
I just can't. There's 180 of them. Who's 86? I just don't know right off
the head. I can't think of any older than 86.
I'll put my money on Jake Wood.
Yeah, Vitale's 81, 82. We've had him on a couple of times.
Well,
so anyway, this our mystery writer right now, his name shall come to us. Our mystery writer says, I'm so glad you've been able to connect with Fred Heumann. From being on Eli's beep list to an occasional co-host is a really nice step up for Fred. Really, Freddie? Were you on Eli Zarrett's beep list? Is that true? That's what this writer says.
Yes,
no way.
According to the guy, that's what he says. And he continues.
He says, "If you can, please ask Fred if he remembers much from his days at Rochester Adams High School, where he was equipment manager, statistician, in other words, the Howard Stitzel of Rochester Adams baseball. Some of my favorite memories were when Fred and I would trade quotes from the Year of the Tiger record featuring Ernie Harwell and Ray Lane. One of our favorite running quotes was a paraphrase of the call of Jim Northrup. And Fred would say, what would you say, Fred? Remember? Not choosy where he hits the four banger. He'll go to right. He'll go to left. And this was signed your buddy Scott Harvey, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Whatever.
I remember sweeping the floor at Rochester Adams, and my claim to fame is I went to high school with Madonna, and I used to tell her, baby, one day one of us is going to be famous.
So did you know Mike Clark as well?
I didn't know Mike, but I'm aware that he went to Rochester Adams.
From the Drew and Mike show.
Yeah.
Now, okay, tell us the truth. Were you in class with Madonna?
Wasn't in class, but she dated a lot of my friends, and I mean a lot of them. I used to say I'm the only one that didn't date Madonna.
Well, did you know her? Did you have conversations with Madonna?
I didn't know her. She was a cheerleader, and I was around sports. Huh. She was very much into theater. She's all over my high school yearbook, pictures of her dancing. She was very much into theater and acting. I didn't know her well. I have good friends who knew her a lot better, but I didn't know her well. She would know who I am, but I didn't know her well.
And that one more thing on that email, when he's regarding Fred being on Eli's crap list, is because in one of our previous episodes, we had Fred scheduled for an interview.
That's what I thought it meant.
And he didn't, and he was, we couldn't reach him.
He stiffed us twice.
And so Eli said that on the show.
Yeah, stiff is a strong word. But I was scheduled to come on, and had a confusion on the days one time, had an appointment the other time, and had no phone to tell you. So I own up to it. But yeah, that was that's what he's referring
to.
You've
totally
with Eli,
redeemed yourself.
I've been told that Eli touched me up, and so did Bob on the podcast. But that's all right. I had it coming.
You deserved it. Better believe it. And your saving grace, your benefactor, Dennis Dale McLean, who says the kid stays in the picture. We said, okay, Denny. Right, Denny?
Thanks, Denny.
Yes, sir.
Fred's a good man. He did. All right, we're almost out of here. Steve Chris says, I was laughing at that stat of the FLs being the first NFL team ever without a fumble through the first six games. Unfortunately, any positive stat associated with the FLs, as he writes, also has a corresponding stat that ends with, but has never been to a Super Bowl, for example. First team ever without a fumble after the first six games, and that has never been to the Super Bowl. You can also call us and leave a message or text us at 760-89-BALLS. Denny, think about this one. Unnamed texter, always popular, probably several people, asked, do you think you guys will ever get golfers, a UFC fighter, NASCAR or Indy driver, or a soccer player in the future?
Well, all they got to do is ask and tell us who they want, and we'll go.
Well, look, that's a good question. First of all, I'd love to have Brad Keselowski on, the Rochester, Michigan native who's tearing up the NASCAR circuit, the outstanding ex-USA national soccer team player, Alexi Lalas.
Some of you know him on our morning show years ago.
Alexi Lalas, yeah, he's from Birmingham. Yeah. He went to Cranbrook High School. UFC fighters, no way. Sorry, I don't consider. Sorry, Brandon.
Speaking of golf, does the name Ken Green mean anything to you guys?
He's a golfer.
He was.
Yeah, PGA Tour player, sure.
Unbelievable story, and I've known him and have a connection with him. I'd love to have him on. He's the guy that had the surgery, had the accident, lost his wife, his dog, his legs, still tried to come back and play golf in a cart. It's a fascinating story.
That's right.
Well, by goodness gracious sakes, we're going to do that. In the meantime, the guy we are going to have on today, I think is a name very well known to all of you football fans. Born in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, my hometown. He went to Waterford Kettering, where he starred in football, basketball, and baseball. Not in hockey, which surprises me, a good Michigan boy from Waterford. Jim Miller was a starting quarterback at Michigan State for 3 years, beginning his sophomore season in 1989. Only a sixth-round draft choice by the Pittsburgh Steelers. But you got to respect this. He still went on to a long pro football career with 9 different teams. Jimmy has a Super Bowl ring from New England and their victory over the Eagles in 2005. And he has a World Bowl champion ring from 95 and the Frankfurt Galaxy. Remember the World League of American Football? He was starting quarterback for Denny's beloved Chicago Bears in 1999, but he missed 4 games. Who's interrupting me here, goddammit? I'm trying to do this intro. May I continue now? Enough from the peanut gallery.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Denny. So Jim missed 4 games due to a steroid suspension, which he said was actually due to a dietary supplement he was taking. He led the Bears to the playoffs in 2002, as you remember, Denny, but he suffered a separated shoulder on an illegal hit in a loss to Philly, and he never really played much after that. Jim Miller was an MSU color commentator for years. He still works on the Chicago Bears post-game shows and has his own show, Moving the Chains, with co-host Pete Kerwin on SiriusXM's NFL Channel 88. It is hard for me to believe this, but Jim Miller turns 50 years old this February. Jimmy, welcome to the program. How you doing, man?
It's great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
No, Jim, we want to hear all about Michigan State and Michigan and the FLs and so on and so forth. So why don't we begin with the University of Michigan, because that's a big topic of conversation. What's been wrong with this program under Jim Harbaugh? And after losing in that, I'm sure you were shocked as we were, game to Michigan State on Saturday, what does this portend for Harbaugh's future in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of doubt right now. Everybody thought he was going to be the magic man that just comes in there, waves a magic wand, and all these victories were going to happen against Ohio State and even in-state rival Michigan State. And I think it's been difficult. I think a lot of it is they really haven't settled the quarterback situation. You know, to me, Ed McCaffrey's son, who was there last year in a backup capacity to Shea Patterson, I thought potentially he would be the answer. He ends up transferring out. They end up going with Joe Milton, who I've heard great things about, but I watched that Michigan State game and I thought he had some mechanical issues. Obviously, wasn't as accurate with the football as everybody thought. I think he's a good athlete, but he still needs a lot of development. And I think that's really been the biggest issue for Jim Harbaugh. He has yet to really solidify that quarterback position. We'll see what happens with Milton, but it's been shaky from the start.
Well, that's a great point, Jim, about Dylan McCaffrey, because the one thing I said earlier in the show is the biggest surprise of the Harbaugh era isn't the record. It's the fact that he has not been able to develop a quarterback, which everyone thought would be his strong trait. The best quarterback he's had is the one he inherited. Why do you suppose Dylan McCaffrey, who had such athleticism, could run and throw, didn't get a chance to it, led to his transfer? Why do you suppose that?
No, he played, Fred. Let's be fair. He did play.
He played a little bit, but he didn't have a prominent role.
Yeah, I saw him play in a couple of games. Like, I know he got in the Wisconsin game a year ago, but I thought he had high upside. And one, just the bloodlines there. You know, you look at his brother, Christian McCaffrey, and his father, Ed McCaffrey. I mean, the whole family is just a group of athletes. And obviously, they take a lot of care and they love their sports. But I thought he potentially could have been something. He felt he wasn't getting the opportunities that he thought he had earned, and that's why he transferred out. And thus they switched to Joe Milton. I think Joe Milton can develop into something, but he has some work to do, you know. And I think you're right, Denny. I think this is really, it's kind of a, you know, for everybody out there, because Harbaugh has played the position, for him not to identify and tag and get guys in there that can play that position in a consistent manner, I think is somewhat shocking. And, you know, it's Michigan. They should get the pick of the litter too. Not only here in state, you would think anywhere in this country that a lot of quarterbacks would love to play at Michigan, and they just have not been able to identify that.
That's been the hardest thing for us to understand. I'm talking about both schools now. What is it that we don't do to get somebody's 4- and 5-star guys to come play with us and play with us like they do at OSU, Ohio State, what have you? What's the issue?
Well, I think it's been a long time. Even when Tom Brady was there, he wasn't a starter. Remember, right. It was Drew Henson. So it's even prior to, in my opinion, it's even prior to when Harbaugh got there. For Michigan State, kind of after, you know, before I went to Michigan State, Dave Aurema was there. He was one of the reasons why I went there. I knew they were going to throw the ball a lot. I ended up handing off a lot more. But even after I went to Michigan State, look at all the quarterbacks that have come out of Michigan State. Tony Banks transferred there. You've got Brian Hoyer, Kirk Cousins. Nick Foles was there until he transferred out because he felt he didn't get a shot. So there's been numerous quarterbacks to come out of Michigan State. So there is a little bit of lineage there that they can turn to that say, hey, you do have a pathway to go to the pros. But really, since Tom Brady, you know, there haven't been too many guys. Yeah. Collins, there hasn't been a lot of guys.
Right. I was starting to ask you, you think Harbaugh might be starting to scare kids away? Like and it's not just the quarterbacks who've been leaving this program. So many guys have transferred out of Michigan. High school coaches and the relationships with them, so important. Sure. Parents, so important. Are they starting to wonder what's going on?
Yeah, I think so. You bring up a good point there, because a lot of these schools do have pipelines, you know, whether it's Detroit Catholic Central or Brother Rice and when things
Thomas Wilcher at Cass Tech. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And they're, you know, when those relationships start to falter, maybe a kid's not getting an opportunity that he feels that he deserves. Some of those coaches can play roughshod now where they just kind of tune you out. I know Michigan State, that's happened to them a couple of times. Where a coach feels that a player went to committed to the school and then felt disenfranchised that he didn't get an opportunity. And let's be honest also, the pipeline to move, meaning the transfer portal, if these kids a lot of them want to come out early in the NFL draft, if they feel they're not getting an opportunity to get on the field quick, they'll just transfer to another school where they feel they'll get an opportunity. In no position more than quarterback, where that's been probably the most visible, where you see all these guys transfer. If they don't get a starting job somewhere, they're going to transfer somewhere where they feel that they can play, get on the field right away so that they can have an opportunity to get a shot at the pros.
Jim, let's talk a little Michigan State, your alma mater. A week ago, the climate was, who did they hire? Why did we pay this guy all this money, Mel Tucker, to be so unprepared in his opener? That, granted, they turned the ball over 7 times, but Lombardi looked like he couldn't throw downfield. They couldn't get anything going. And in 1 week, they turn it around to no turnovers and beat Michigan, which I thought was the most surprising result in my lifetime in this rivalry. What, really? I'm serious. What do you? Maybe other. Maybe
the, I think the, you're talking. I think you're talking all four sports, not just Michigan State football.
Maybe other than the 2-point conversion in the end zone with Gary Moeller back in the day. But what do you make of that remarkable turnaround by Michigan State in 1 week?
Yeah, it was a rough start against Rutgers, and you're right, the turnovers really killed him. The only thing I would say about Mel Tucker, he was kind of late to the party, you know, and that'd probably be my biggest criticism about Michigan State is how they handled that coaching search. I don't think they went about it right, but here they end up landing Mel Tucker. You know, obviously for him, that was too good of wasn't a difficult decision for him to leave Colorado, where he was doing a great job. Does have a past and bloodlines to Michigan State. And so I think he was late to the party. And for him, and then you deal with the pandemic and how was the Big Ten going to play? Were they not going to play? So I think it's been disjointed for him to get to know the guys on the roster, plus get guys on the staff. I do think he's done a good job with those staff members. One of them is my former teammate in Courtney Hawkins, who's now the wide receivers coach there. And You see Naylor and White and these young receivers starting to make plays. And a lot of those plays were made against University of Michigan.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the reason we have Mel Tucker there. And I would dispute the one point you made about not a difficult decision. It was, because he told everybody he was staying and he lied. And then he went to East Lansing and he disappointed a lot of people out in Boulder. Be that as it may, Mark D'Antonio and the manner in which he left Michigan State University, people saying he dropped the ball his last 2 years, he stopped recruiting, so on and so forth. What were your thoughts on D'Antonio in that scenario?
Yeah, well, I think my criticism of Mark D'Antonio, who I think is tremendous. He's a tremendous coach and has done tremendous things at Michigan State and hopefully will continue to do so in another capacity. But, you know, I think loyalty at times can be a bad trait. I think he was loyal to some of those offensive staff members, giving them an opportunity. He did not want to fire any of his coaches. And that's a good quality to have. But when it becomes detrimental to winning and losing games, I think you got to make the right decision. And so he kind of just shuffled the deck rather than get a replacement in terms of their offensive woes, because defensively they've always been stacked. I mean, shoot, even last year, if they could score 17 points, they would have had a lot more victories. And so I think loyalty was the biggest one. I don't know too much about the recruiting side of it and guys who he's recruited from that standpoint. I've always had a good relationship with all the coaches up there and have communicated with them about players around the country and things like that. So I don't think identifying talent was a problem. They never really went out and tried to recruit like 5-star recruits and things like that. They didn't recruit stars. They recruit people. And I think when you have a couple of bad apples that turn out not the way you want, and you probably should have gone a different direction, you know, those are going to come with consequences.
Jim, Major League Baseball has this tendency with managers and coaches and what have you. They like to bring their friends along to their party when they become the manager of the ball club, the same coach at third base, the same pitching coach, the whole thing. Is the college thing the same way? Bring your friends?
Well, I don't think that's always the case, but normally, yeah, you're going to bring on board people that you believe you can trust. You know, because the last thing you want is any backfighting and infighting within your building when it comes to disagreement. Now, I'm not saying you need to have yes men, because that's not good either. You want to identify the defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, and then fill the positions with the greatest teachers that you can. Normally, if you're the head coach, which they're going to have an area of expertise, whether it's on offense or whether it's on defense, and they may put their fingerprints and give some additions of what they're going to do on their area of expertise. But you try to trust your coaches to do good things and obviously do their job and what they're hired to do. And in coaching circles, a lot of these coaches come across paths with one another, either at different stops or whether it's at coaching clinics. Maybe they're getting recommendations from other friends of theirs that they've had good experiences with in the past. And that tends normally to really lean on where a coach is really leaning in terms of who he wants to hire.
Jim, I bet you were with me in thinking at the time that the only guy for this Michigan State job was Luke Fickell. And he wanted no part of what was going on in East Lansing, so they didn't get him. You know Mel Tucker? I mean, do you have a gut feeling about who this man is and whether he might succeed at Michigan State?
Yeah, he was a defensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears when Mark Trestman was a coach there. So I know Mel very well.
Oh, okay.
He did a good job in Chicago.
Yeah, and I think he'll do a good job recruiting. I think he's a national known name. Obviously, he's had tremendous stops other places where he's coached defenses to national championships. And so I think he's well known in coaching circles. In terms of, you know, whether it's Luke Fickell or even I think Michigan State reached out to Pat Narduzzi. I think, again, when it comes to hiring, you know, here is the recruiting season, right? None of those coaches, you got to go there with an offer. If you don't have an offer on the table, it's not even worth wasting their time, because then it gets leaked out there that these coaches are considering Michigan State. And that's kind of how Michigan State approached it, to see if these coaches would consider. You can't do that. You go there with an offer. You put an offer on the table, and then the coach can decide whether he's going to stay or whether he's going to go. Because if you go out there and you just say, hey, and start leaking to the media, hey, we talked to Pat Narduzzi, he's considering Michigan State, that just blows up his whole recruiting at Pitt, yeah. Panthers.
Did they do that, Jim? Did Michigan State leak stuff like that to the media?
No, I'm not. It was leaked out there. So I don't know who did the leaking, but that's why, coach, they won't touch that with a 10-foot pole, you know, because it's going to blow up their whole recruiting class and what they're trying to build at their current program. And so, you know, because it was leaked, you know, I heard all the reports about Luke Fickell. That's why Luke pulled his name quickly. He knows what he's trying to build there in Cincinnati. He doesn't want anything to blow it up. So, again, you got to come there with an offer. That's when a coach would consider staying or leaving.
So, thus, your criticism of Michigan State. That's what you're saying. That's how, in your mind, they mishandled that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. We kept hearing that Luke Fickell just didn't want to be part of that situation at Michigan State. And I suggested this also, and I may be the first person to have done this, Jim. You look at Bo Schembechler. You look at former Ohio State star Gary Moeller. You look at the people who have come, Lloyd Carr. You don't have to be a Michigan man to be the head football coach at Michigan. Is there any way Ohio State man Luke Fickell could go to Ann Arbor and replace Harbaugh?
I don't think so. You know, I know the pressure is rising for Jim Harbaugh and the criticisms there, because they got to win more games. You know, I think Jim Harbaugh is capable of doing that. He's built programs, you know, whether it's at Stanford and other stops that he's made, and even in the NFL where he's had a lot of success. Now he's there back at his alma mater, and he is a Michigan man, and he did great things as a player. And I think everybody thinks he's just going to, again, wave a magic wand and Michigan's going to be great. Bottom line is, you got to cultivate that position. They've got to settle the quarterback position, or they're not going to win a lot of games. And so that's been the turnstile and the revolving door there. They still have great players. Even look at last year's draft, whether it's Josh Uche, and other players that have drafted, good offensive linemen.
Ten guys.
Yeah, so the talent is there. I think that position of quarterback is holding them back. They got to get that right.
Jim, so what are you saying that the problem with the football team is the talent? We've got mediocre talent rather than the stars?
No, I think Michigan, again, they had 10 guys drafted. So the talent, to me, is there. And a lot of kids around this country want to go to U of M. I mean, yeah, that's a winningest program in college football. And it has a lot of rich history and tradition, and a lot of great players have come out of there, Heisman Trophy type of players. So I don't think talent is the issue. I think solidifying that position has been a struggle for them. And until they do that, they'll continue to struggle.
Jim, you had an opportunity to play at Michigan. Did you consider it?
Yeah, I had an offer to play there. They didn't want me to play both baseball and football, and I wanted to keep my baseball opportunities open.
That was always the issue. Ricky Leach went through that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, Michigan State allowed me to, you know, keep that door open. I only ended up playing 1 year of baseball at Michigan State, but I did get drafted one more time. And at least I had my choice whether to go pro baseball or pro football. And just the position of quarterback was so challenging. And, you know, I enjoyed playing football, and I made that choice and elected to be a Pittsburgh Steeler.
You also had an opportunity, of which you availed yourself, to stay in your hometown of Detroit and play for the Lions. That was in 2008, but you didn't appear in a game, and they cut you before the season. I'm sure that was a disappointment to you. What was your experience like just being part of that organization, and what's wrong with that organization? Just starts with the ownership, right?
Well, yeah, I think, I grew up, I wasn't really a Lions fan. I was a Billy Sims fan, and I had Freddie Scott and players like that that really drew my attention. But, you know, when I had the opportunity to play here, Kevin Colbert, it was, part of their personnel department, and he thought I was worthy to bring on. At that point, I was still hurt. I had a hernia that I was dealing with, and it just didn't work out. Bobby Ross was a coach. They just drafted Charlie Batch out of Eastern Michigan. I think I was kind of just in the way if they kept me on the roster because I was playing at a high level comparable to their starter, Scott Mitchell. But it was the best thing, a decision that happened to me and that I got released because I went to Chicago and started playing right away.
You dropped a name there, Jim, Kevin Colbert. I think if the Lions had held on to him in the front office and kept him around rather than having him go to the Steelers, I think if they would have seen the inside of Kevin Colbert and they would have had him run their football operations, I think we'd be talking about a different Lions era today than we are now. You?
I don't disagree with you. I think Kevin is one of the best in the business. Just look at the roster he's built for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, he signs quality players and drafts quality players. I mean, look at how many guys they've drafted out of the MAC that have turned out to be great players. Anyone from Antonio Brown and other players, the Deontay Johnson, who is a starter there right now. So Kevin can uncover a lot of talent. And I tend to agree with you. When you have a lot of turnover, teams like Cleveland or the Jets or the Detroit Lions, when you're constantly changing coaching staffs and they start drafting and they hire a new coach, and really the players that are already drafted don't fit the scheme of what the coach is now going to do. So Detroit is just constantly turning a turnstile, in my opinion. Now you've got ownership coming out saying that Matt Patricia needs to go to the playoffs or he's not going to have a job. They did that prior to free agency. What free agent is going to sign with Detroit knowing that the head coach could be released at the end of the season? That's why all they could get are New England Patriots, right? Former New England Patriots. You know, they basically cut down the league from 32 or 31 teams to really 30, you know, so they excluded all those teams. So just players that know him we're only going to sign in Detroit.
Yeah, Jimmy, that's a great segue to our next topic. And that is, you know, you looked at all the great Patriots success. Yes, well, is it Belichick? Is it Brady? Or is it a combination of the two? I guess we know now, don't we? Look at what Tampa Bay is doing and what's happened to New England without Tom Brady.
Yeah. Well, Tom's a great player. You know, I had the opportunity to play with him. He earns everything that he gets. He works extremely hard. He's an unselfish teammate. He's a great football player. And he just loves the game of football, but he will outwork everybody in order to achieve and have success. I think for Bill, Bill's still probably the most impressive coach I've ever played for. There is not one thing that he doesn't think about going into a game. They've had a lot of turnover on their team. They've had a lot of opt-outs. So Bill Belichick and them can still turn around this season, is my opinion. They've got some young talent that they're kind of just taking their lumps right now to build that their program back up. And obviously they're going to have to identify another quarterback because I think this will only be a 1 year and out for Cam Newton.
Anybody ever approached you about coaching?
Yeah. Dick Geron, when he became the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, he's approached me about it. Other guys have approached me about it. For me, like when I first retired from football, I just had to get healthy. You mentioned my shoulder. I had to go through six surgeries. I've had to get a couple of hip operations. So it's been about 17 surgeries. So I was kind of always healing up.
Would you repeat that? How many surgeries?
17 surgeries.
God. You know, Lem Barney regrets ever having played football. He says he would have been a tennis player instead. 17 surgeries? Do you regret playing football?
No.
You're a great all-around athlete.
Yeah, I don't regret one bit of it. I'm the healthiest I've ever been since I retired. I feel terrific now that I got everything corrected that I needed to. But there's not a day. I love football. Always love playing it. I love practicing football. Even the smell of the grass in training camp, two-a-days were never a problem for me. I always look forward to it. Now I get to talk about it because it still is a passion of mine, and I'm able to talk about NFL football 4 hours every single day. Matter of fact, I'll be in Ann Arbor calling the Wisconsin-Michigan contest.
If it's played.
Yeah, I'm crossing my fingers that Graham, or the quarterback for Wisconsin, and the coach, Paul Christ, everybody's going to be hopefully ready to go for that matchup.
Jim Miller with us. Jim, you mentioned a name, Antonio Brown. We talked about him earlier in the show. Let me just ask you point blank. As talented as he is, and now he's with Brady again, would you want Antonio Brown as a teammate?
No, I wouldn't. I think he's too much of a headache. I think Tom and Bruce Arians, Bruce is a lot of tough love. And I think Bruce was being truthful that he didn't want Antonio Brown on his roster either. He had coached him before in Pittsburgh, but they had a ton of injuries. So you're kind of making a deal with the devil. So it's basically a minimum salary. If he's any problem at all, Bruce already came out and said that they would release him if he becomes any type of headache at all. But I just – I think it's just not worth it, is my opinion. When you have a disruptive force come in a locker room and start disrupting things, you saw how it threw it, basically ripped apart the Steelers. It ripped apart the, at that point, the Oakland Raiders, and they had to move on. They had to move on, and same with the New England Patriots. He arrived there. He makes a good impression early, but it's just a matter of time where he's a ticking time bomb, and it's somewhat just a self-destructive nature starts to come out.
Speaking of the Steelers, I was not going to waste my afternoon watching the FLs, as I call them, you know, playing another game last Sunday. I watched the Steelers and the Ravens. What a great game. And they're going to play again Thanksgiving night. Are the Pittsburgh Steelers undefeated the best team in football? Or do you think Kansas City still might be better, or Baltimore?
No, I think Steelers are definitely they're the best overall team. When you factor in their defense, again, comes back to Kevin Colbert and players he's identified. That team has been on a mission every single week. Got a healthy Big Ben. They've got a ton of talented weapons around them. So I think they're the best overall team. Kansas City would probably be number two, in my opinion. And then just to round it out, it's going to be any other of the AFC teams behind them. It's going to be a struggle to go through those two teams. Key is going to be, obviously, the playoff seeding. If the Steelers can keep this record up and not lose again, obviously, to Baltimore, because the first seed is the only one that's going to get the bye week. So whether it's if it's Pittsburgh, it's going to be tough going into Heinz Field. And then if Kansas City, if the Steelers were to lose and Kansas City emerges as the number one seed, it's tough to go into Arrowhead. But I think the Steelers have proven in their history they've gone into Arrowhead before and beaten the Kansas City Chiefs come playoff time.
With the Chicago Bears, they got two quarterbacks.
I was going to just ask about the Bears for you. I can't believe you haven't asked Jimmy if they should go back to Trubisky yet.
With the Chicago Bears, we got two quarterbacks fighting for a job. Yeah. Foles and the other guy, the Polish guy.
Yeah.
And,
he just calls him the Polish guy, Jim. That's all he calls him.
Good guys. I mean,
he doesn't like him, Jim.
To be good guys. What is going on with this battle that they're having? I mean, you were a quarterback in the NFL. You understand. And the competitiveness must be coming out, because I've always thought anybody that played baseball and football, basketball, you got to be an egomaniac to begin with, especially if you want to be the pitcher or the quarterback. Yeah. What is going on with Chicago right now? Because, man, they all of a sudden they suck again.
Well, they got to get this offense cranked up. This offense has been woeful, literally, since Nagy has been there. You know, out of the 41 games they played, 25 of those games they've scored under 20 points.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, last year the injuries at tight end were a problem. You know, then they trade away Adam Shaheen. Luckily they draft Cole Kmet. They signed Jimmy Graham. So it's much better this year because Nagy brings a tight end centric offense from Kansas City under Andy Reid. Look at Kansas City. They've got Kelce. Think about when Andy Reid was in Philadelphia or even in Green Bay. You had guys like Mark Chimura at the tight end position. So it's always been kind of a tight end-centric offense. Last year, it just wasn't even available because they got injured at that position. Trey Burton and all their players were hurt. Now that they've addressed that position, their personnel is much better on offense. I think for Trubisky, he just hasn't grown. You know, you've got to learn, and I've watched him numerous times, that he doesn't understand coverages and where he's going with the football. He's sometimes late on throws. He doesn't identify blitzes quick enough, and that should start to happen. It should already be happening for Mitch Trubisky, but that's been lagging from that standpoint. That's why they went to the veteran in Nick Foles, and I don't think they'll be changing back anytime soon.
Really? Good for you. I hope not.
You think of the, let's just say, the two greatest human beings as people you've ever known in your life. And on this program last week, Fred Heumann said that of those two people, one of those would be Kirk Cousins. So I want you to tell us about Kirk Cousins and what's going on with him and if he can become the quarterback the Vikings hoped that he would become.
Yeah, well, for Kirk, he's a tremendous man of faith. You know, he definitely has a religious background, and he puts all his decisions into a higher power. I think
Is that good or bad? Because some, you know what they say about that.
Well, I think for him, that's just how he was raised. You know, his family, religion is a big part of his family. And so, you know, and he won't hide that. He won't hide that and who he is and why he believes the way he does. And so I think he's open. I think he's honest about it. And I just think you just understand that that's a big part of who Kirk Cousins is.
We know that, Jim, but you know what it's said about people like that sometimes as well? Maybe they're not as competitive as they should because, well, you know, it's out of my hands. It's in God's hands.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's the case for Kirk. You know, I think he works extremely hard. Winning's important to him. I think he wants to be perfect. And the game of football, at times, things aren't always going to be perfect. You got to think outside the box and be able to think on your feet and make a play when maybe the left guard isn't blocking a player correctly, or maybe a receiver runs the wrong route, and you got to be able to adjust and make quick decisions on the fly. And I think for Kirk, he's more than mobile enough to get out of the pocket and make plays, but you know, he's not an ultra athlete like, say, a Cam Newton or Russell Wilson and things like that. He's going to need help around him in order to have success, is my take on him. He's had some extreme highs and he's had some extreme lows. And normally when you have those and you've dealt with both sides of the spectrum, you become mentally tougher, because that position, you got to be like Teflon in the NFL. I used to laugh when everybody, I think Ryan Tannehill right now is a good example of that. I think Alex Smith is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. Alex Smith, number one overall pick of the San Francisco 49ers. He took that team to the NFC Championship game and they wanted to kick him to the curb. Here he gets traded to the Kansas City Chiefs, takes that team to the playoffs four times. But nobody acknowledges how good Alex Smith is. He's just some guy who's considered a bust. He's not a bust. Then he goes to Washington. They were winning the division with Alex Smith prior to him breaking his leg. Otherwise, that coach would still be there in Washington. So Alex Smith has gone through the school of hard knocks, and he is Teflon right now. That's why I bring up Tannehill. He goes from Miami. He was getting kicked around down there, but he's a fierce competitor, and he's Teflon right now. I think that's what Kirk Cousins got to get. He's got to become Teflon. You can't hear the boo birds from outside. You got to ignore it all and just wipe it all out.
And that's interesting. Yeah, you say kick to the curb. One of the biggest stories in the league this year is that Ryan Fitzpatrick got kicked to the curb, and the Dolphins are starting Tua. What did you think about that?
Yeah, well, I think it's the right move. You know, here's the team.
Really?
I think it's the right move. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick wasn't under any delusions of grandeur that he was going to be the quarterback all year. It was known to him. It was talked to by Brian Flores, their head coach, that, hey, at some point, Tua is going to play. They drafted him number 7 overall. They need to find out if he is the quarterback of the future, or they'll have to go right back in the draft and do it again. They like what they've seen from Tua. Chan Gailey is their OC. I've been with Chan Gailey. He was my offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, and Chan will do a great job with Tua. Kid's smart. He's savvy. He's a natural passer of the football, and he's extremely talented. I think he's going to have a good future there, and it's bright. And I think Ryan Fitzpatrick will be nice in a mentor role because he's a good teammate.
Jim, you strike me as you're talking about the Teflon factor / toughness in what a quarterback needs. I think of your career. Now, what did you play in the NFL? 12 years?
12 years.
12 years. You were never a star. You were never a great player at the NFL level. To survive 12 years in that league with so many teams and not be a star, and I don't mean that as an insulting way, just to be an okay NFL quarterback, you must have had that factor down pat, because you couldn't survive if you didn't. Did you?
I'd go to work every single day. You know, for me, I think coaches everywhere I've been, they know I love football. And they know I'll give it up for my football team, any team that I've been on. And I got kind of known around the league that I could pick up offenses really quick, and it became my niche, that they knew that they could bring me in a 2-week notice and I could physically get on the field and play and start for their team and have an opportunity to win. So I was very serious about my job, because that's what it was. It was a job. A lot of people don't realize that. You got to be accountable. You got to be reliable. You got to be productive. And I fortunately was able to be productive for 12 years till I couldn't do it anymore.
Hey, Jim, thanks so much for coming on. I think the listeners can see, if they're not familiar with your national radio work, why you become a star as a media person, if not ever as
indeed.
A football quarterback
indeed.
In the NFL.
You're terrific.
Well,
good job, man.
And
yeah, continued good luck on SiriusXM. Thanks, Jim. Who still lives in Clarkson, by the way. So
I wish I'd have had you in the lineup somewhere along the line of my career. Would have just given me one
Put
more
me
out.
In, Coach. Just give me a chance.
Yeah, okay. Have a good one, Jimmy.
Thanks,
thank
Jimmy.
You.
Bye-bye. Again, thanks to Jim Miller. Terrific guy, and does a great job on SiriusXM. Freddie, you keep doing a terrific job here. You know, we should make this a regular thing. I think we're going to do that with you. And Denny, you got any place you're signing or going this weekend? Anything you want to plug?
No,
if not,
I'm
going to say goodbye.
I
speak
am
now.
Absolutely home with this surge that's going on. We're going to rest for the next couple of weeks.
As always, thanks to our brilliant producer and engineer, Brandon McAfee. Fred, thanks. And thank you all for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Bye-bye.